Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the All Caps. That's the ALCP podcast number 4. Today, we're joined by the president of the ALCP, Stephen Wilkinson. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning, Vinny. Good morning, Chris.
And also Chris Woodley from New Zealand Hemp Brokers. Now, we just want to get into this pretty much straight away. Chris, would you be able to introduce yourself to the audience and give them a little background on who you are and what it is you do?
My name's Chris Woodley, and I'm the director at New Zealand Hemp Brokers. And New Zealand Hemp Brokers was sort of founded to bring New Zealand hemp products to the local market and the international market. I founded the company out of necessity, finding that there was no actual products on the market in New Zealand and really starting to wonder why that was. I spent a lot of time inside legislation, UN Single Convention, Misuse of Drugs Act and Misuse of Drugs Regulations, and also the hemp regulations. And, there's pathways for us to follow in that legislation that allows us to make products from industrial hemp and make those products available to the local public and so on and so forth. So, yeah, we are trying to put high-value commodities back at the farm gate. We believe that, producing oil from the soil is sort of like the future of agriculture for New Zealand. And, hemp is such a complementary crop. I think so many people are worried about hemp taking over, but they really need to look at how hemp can, complement what they're currently doing.
How do you feel that is actually working out at the moment? Do you feel that the government and the government agencies are streamlining the process for hemp growers, manufacturers, marketers and things of that nature, or are they behaving more in the way of an impediment?
So the New Zealand Ministry of Health have never ever really been enabling of the New Zealand hemp industry. I mean, you just have to look at what's happening in Canada to look at what's happening in New Zealand and compare the two. I mean, at the same time we had our legislation put in place, Canada had the same sort of thing, and they've gone from 6,000 acres, I think, to 500,000 this year or last year, and I don't even think we're over 100 hectares yet. So enabling, no, but disabling for the last 9 years, definitely. It seemed that we were sort of on the right path to get there with the Labor-led Helen Clark government back in the earlier days. And, I think the opposition from National is, if it's got cannabis in it, then we're not even going to chuck anything at it. So there's just been a roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. Every product that the industry comes up with, the ministry, advising us that, outside of the legislation that, oh, that's a product, but the person must have a license. Well, that's not what legislation says. Legislation says products are legal, and it says that any person can possess, use, or trade in products. It's written in black and white for them. And then they keep trying to refer us back into the Misuse of Drugs Act, back into the Misuse of Drugs Regulations. And, you just have to go into the Misuse of Drugs Regulations and have a look in there. I think it's 3B of the licensing part. Number one says no license under these regulations may be issued in respect of industrial hemp. So that's in the Misuse of Drugs regulations, saying that no license shall be issued under these regulations. So that's the Misuse of Drugs regulations in regards to hemp. So hemp is clearly outside the Misuse of Drugs regulations, and it clearly sits outside the Misuse of Drugs Act.
I just jump in there, Vinny, just for a second. Chris, I spoke to Helen Clark back in the mid-2000s and also Nick Smith, and I think one of the biggest problems is the people that they have around them that are advising them. When I brought up the issues of using hemp for as an alternative fuel source, both of them said blatantly, no one has told us about that. If it was true, then we would have been informed about that. So they're not getting the information they need to be able to make the decision, which is a sad thing for us New Zealanders.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Stephen. The advisors to the ministry are clearly out of date. They're clearly dated, you know, dated positions that need to maybe be revisited by some new and, you know, a younger, livelier sort of futuristic outlook advisors that can actually, you know, take into consideration the amount of studies that have been done just on the, not on the hemp, but on the cannabis plant in general.
I'd be more concerned that it's not the age of the person. It's more the fact that these advisors are actually targeted by lobbyists, and that would be where they'd be making their motivation. That would be motivating them to send the message to the members because of their motivation of lobbyists. Because we know that when it comes up to cannabis, irrespective if it's hemp or cannabis head itself, lobbyists will go to Parliament and they will lobby to ensure that we maintain status quo. And sadly, because of that, hemp gets dragged into that and is affected. I mean, there should be no laws on growing hemp. Hemp's a plant that has got so many benefits that we should be diving into that. We should be the foremost users of that, I think, this country.
Yeah, as an agricultural commodity, I don't think you get a better plant species than the industrial hemp plant. I mean, I think I'm not sure if you're at the hemp summit just gone in Wellington, but
I
just think that they remember Greg O'Connor stating we need to look at, you know, producing higher value rather than higher volume.
Oh, that's Damien O'Connor.
Oh, sorry, Damien O'Connor. You know, higher value over higher volume. Well, to me, it's a no-brainer. You know, what are we looking at? You know, at the moment, it's still up around the $7,000 a kilo for isolate of CBD. That's US dollars, just buying by the kilo. I mean, if you're buying in 100-kilo lots, you can get it down to about that $5,500 US. But clearly, you know, we could be offering farmers $15,000 a hectare for a hemp crop, and they could be utilizing that in so many various ways. I mean, one, absorbing nitrates from the soil and stopping runoff into our lakes and rivers, but two, you know, pressing oil from the seed, giving them a high-value commodity at the gate. So, you know, changing that whole grain price from like $3 up to like $30 or for a litre sort of thing, and then using the byproduct of that for animal feed. And then lot of research.
And there's more things. I mean, where I live in a small rural area at the top of the South Island, and we could purchase from our supermarket until just recently hemp seed milk from Canada. And which is perfect non-dairy milk out there. It was beautiful, and they took it off the shelves because of the agreement we signed with Australia. So they took it off as a food. But I mean, it's one of the big things about hemp seed is it's a food. It's pure protein. And
the whole plant's a food, not just the seed.
Yes, I know. But that's what I mean. The farmers can use. You're using one crop. You're getting more than one product from one crop. So, which is fantastic. It's a fantastic thing for New Zealanders.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a complementary crop for any farming practices, you know.
Yes.
The one thing I also wanted to acknowledge about that use of the hemp plant is the need and the for processing and manufacturing and harvesting equipment, which for the last however many decades hasn't been in development. Like, when there's an industry and it's going and people are making money at it because they're allowed to and they don't get any hassles with it, a lot of minds go into thinking up ideas, devices and technology in order to do that particular thing better. And hemp and cannabis at the moment is basically suffering a 90-year lag, and yet they're still capable of turning a profit even with essentially ancient technology by the hemp industrial standard. And, you know, that could be quite encouraging, but on the other hand, as a New Zealander, I think, we can come up with some very, very interesting number 8 wire solutions to all of these problems. It's too hardy. It gets stuck in the bottoms of the trailers. It's got all this pollen and stuff everywhere. It makes people cough and hurts their lungs when you harvest too much of it. There's bird problems. There's all these sorts of things which, you know, appear really terrible, but often have quite simple technological solutions to the right mind.
Yeah, I think you're dead right. Once you let farmers get their minds around this, I mean, farmers have lived off the land for so long, and they're just ingenious people, you know. They come up with solutions for problems, and I guess that's where innovation starts. I mean, innovation starts at looking at solving problems, and I guess that's where I started in the industry. I looked at two of the major problems, which was one was bird strike, getting a lot of bird strikes. So, you know, we had in the first year before I was licensed, we had a 10 hectare block go in 5 days out on the coast of Gisborne. And that was just decimated in 5 days, literally 5 days before we got there. So, you know, you go in there and you clap your hands and all of a sudden the sea of blackness just comes out from the crop. Why though? Why are the birds after it? You know, you've got to start to look at as human beings, we innately followed what animals did. You know, we looked at what they did and sort of ate what they ate so they weren't dying. So we sort of figured it would be good for us. So we've sort of evolved into this space, and we don't look at what the animals are doing anymore, and we sort of focus on, profit before people. And I guess that's a major issue with our whole health system as well. I mean, a lot of the foods we're eating are just not good for us. You're losing a lot of the nutrition and stuff like that. So the birds are obviously chasing something. We know that they're chasing the high omega-3, 6, 9 fatty acids that are in the sea. And that brings me to my other point. You know, we ate birds and eggs before we ate beef. So, you know, back before 1937, before hemp was outlawed, hemp was everywhere. So you've just got to look at it that, well, the birds ate it and we ate the birds. So naturally cannabinoids or phytocannabinoids, as are found raw in the plant, were in our diet anyway. You know, we came from the dirt. And we had to have had something regulating our health within that time, right back to the before written history. This plant's been around, and to deny us of it is to me, it's criminal. It really is. It's an essential part of good living.
Well, it's criminal. Yes, and if I may, I just want to kind of define that one here as well. What is criminal? Criminal is the ability to hurt, steal, and destroy other things in order to enrich yourself or accumulate power. Who's enriching themselves and accumulating power over hemp and the cannabis industries being held back the way they are?
Their competition. Whether it's textile, whether it's paper, whether it's pharmaceutical, whether it's food, it's competition. That's the whole thing.
Whoa. Are you
right
telling me
was
that there are conceivably about 1,000 or 2,000 industries, like technical industries, that have a stake in this fight in keeping it down? Otherwise,
no,
it will
no,
threaten.
No,
think about
no,
all the
no,
different
no,
forms of agriculture
no,
that
know,
there are,
asked...
all the different forms of alcohol manufacture there are, the oil companies and all the associated manufacturing downstreams and things like that, all the forestry industries getting all the paper, the land sales and things of that nature.
No, Vinny, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is prohibition and the lies that were told about cannabis at the start of prohibition has been so successful and it's been going on for so long that people who work in industries believe a truth that is not true. And so they're anti-cannabis straight up, whether they know the facts or not, because that's what they know. It's a known to them. Pot is bad. Pot makes you stupid. Pot does all these bad things. Pot makes you... if you're a colored person, look at white women. Pot makes you love jazz. All these things. We've had that through. So, they're not conspiring against to keep cannabis illegal. They're just not realizing, but they're just a tool of the original people who were trying to do it, which was the textile industry, which back in the 30s.
What happened to that textile industry? Did it just disappear? What happened to those oil companies?
No,
did they just disappear? Or by chance,
because they had a monopoly?
One second, please. But by chance, because they had a monopoly then on the manufacture of certain materials, nylon and that kind of thing, they became obscenely powerful, were able to buy out their competition, and then started lobbying to prevent their competition from ever coming back.
The reason why cannabis became a threat to textile industry like cotton is because they were just on the verge of creating a machine that was going to mechanicalize the harvesting of hemp and thrashing it, which was a hard, laborious process. So basically, they got the government to say, well, it's 100% tax on growing cannabis, so you can't make money from it.
That's not what I'm talking about. When it was illegal, that we all agree on that. I mean, that's no kidding. That's historical record. I'm talking about it's still happening.
Yes, because we believe what we think is true, which is not true. We believe that cannabis is evil and no one should touch it because it's going to ruin people's lives.
Well, my point is that there's financing. There is financing and influence behind that.
You've really got to look at the big boys and really look back to, you know, we just sort of went through history and sort of mentioned textiles. But I think it all started, well before that. I think, you know, you're looking at the United States Treasurer of Andrew Mellon, who owned Gulf Oil and he owned Union Steel. And then you had the likes of Henry Ford, who was making a car out of the ground that was 10 times stronger than steel and lighter. And he was running it on Rudolph diesels, on fuel. I think it comes down into those two industries, and it was agriculture versus industry. And when you've got somebody in such power as Mellon was, you know, he was able to influence a lot of things. I mean, he was a great supporter of the Volstead Act. And the Volstead Act was put in 1920, and that prohibited alcohol as ethanol was competing against, you know, petroleum, mm-hmm. petrol. 1919, he had the first drive-in petrol station. So how do you get rid of your competition? And again, so I guess they put themselves in a position where they had the upper hand. I think it's Anslinger was quoted in saying in 1933, there's no bigger fallacy than, you know, cannabis makes people violent. But yet he's out there in 1937 just totally promoting it as this really bad thing. And so, yeah, there are drivers behind it. And I think the drivers essentially are money. And I mean, you know, when you look at it, that's sort of the money and the power that they sort of took over, and then once people had that power, they didn't want to relinquish it, and now we're coming full circle. Like, I mean, you know, everything comes full circle, and that's what I've noticed in life, is that, you know, everything comes around to sort of where you started again, because I guess you get a second chance to correct the mistakes of the past. And, you know, I went to the Carbon Zero meeting that's just been started by the government just around New Zealand, sort of asking for feedback. And, you know, it's really hard because the guys from MPI, they have no idea about hemp. The lady presenting the whole presentation had no idea about hemp. All she talked about was planting trees. And it's like, well, why are we planting trees? We can plant hemp, you know, like it absorbs more CO2. We can utilize this whole crop. And they don't actually know or understand. So I guess for me, it's education. Education of the people. And I think once the people are educated, then we can sort of, with the momentum of the backing of the people, we can push the politicians to make change.
If I may, when we were at the iHemp Summit, it was really good how we had these smartphones. We were able to ask questions of the speakers, and we had these big charts that came up on the screens and things like that, and actually told you what the audience was feeling about these particular subjects. And you touched on the word there, education, which was the answer to the question, what is the biggest impediment in the way of the current hemp and cannabis industry, is education. Now, what's interesting, I look at it from a media perspective, is that the reason why these ideas were implanted wasn't because the education system necessarily told them, it was because of propaganda, lies, repetition, fear tactics, and all of these base things that affect people on a reptilian cortex level, so that their analytical brain, their proto-cortex, isn't working anymore. Oh, I've abandoned my reasoning. I'm acting out of fear. Suddenly you'll obey whoever says, I can save you from this fear that I created for you. Yes, that's what I'm going to do. And as a result, your need, or shall I say our need as a human race essentially, is to invest in counter-propaganda, both on behalf of the government and on behalf of even private companies and things of that nature. What are advertisements, if not propaganda? What is a meme created by a company to promote itself but propaganda? In a way, it is trying to promote an idea. Propaganda is defined ubiquitously as either black propaganda, which is where you use lies to convince somebody of a particular idea, and white propaganda, where you use the truth instead. And I think
I agree with Chris. I think the education is definitely the biggest thing that we have to do. I've been with ALCP now since 2004, and I sort of try to knowledge myself on all aspects of cannabis, being for recreational, being for medicinal, being for industrial. And in the past, when I've spoken to people from the industrial part of cannabis in New Zealand, I've had comments like, oh, we wish you guys weren't even here. You guys are slowing us down. And then I've had talks with people early. These are thoughts have changed now. We're going back a few years. People on the medicinal side is going, oh, look, let's just legalize medicinal first and we'll see how that goes. And then we can focus on recreational. ALCP believes that, yes, education is the one key to change this law. And that we believe that if we can we can get cannabis removed from the Misuse of Drugs Act and regulated, everybody's a winner. Industrial's a winner because then suddenly cannabis is not anything now except a plant that can be grown. Medicinal people can use it and have a true medicinal model for cannabis. And people who just want to use it to wind down at the end of the day have that freedom as well. So that's what we as a party support. We are 100% behind industrial cannabis. We're 100% behind medicinal cannabis movement. But we see that to give everybody a win at the same time is to take the plant out of the Misuse of Drugs Act and regulate that. And that, in our eyes, sees everyone wins, except maybe gangs who are making illegal money selling tinnies to kids.
And the government, who are incidentally a gang.
Well, no, the government will make money because they will get taxed. They will get GST. So even the government wins, because that means if the government wins, then we win, because that money comes back into our economy. So the only people that lose really are just gangs. The people who I'm happy to grow some dak up in the bush and I'm going to make $25,000, $30,000 a year and I'm going to stay on the dole as well. Those people, which I find on the West Coast when I campaign, say we don't want cannabis legal, because they just are selfish and they're only thinking of themselves and this free money that they make. But, I mean, to grow pot illegally is really stressful. I mean, my argument to them is, well, why not regulate cannabis, get yourself a license to produce cannabis to sell to an outlet, and then you're a legitimate horticulturalist. Mm-hmm. You can hold your head up high in the community. No one's going, oh, look at that guy over there. He's the one who grows pot. You know what I mean? So let's legitimize it and let everybody win, because it's not about on me first, you first, or don't bother us because we don't want people to think we're potheads.
Now, if I may.
Let's get this. You may.
I wanted to ask Chris a question as well. I mean, just him personally. We talked before the show about how the government is basically just getting in the way. They're referring to the Misuse of Drugs Act when you're referring to hemp, which basically ain't even in there. It's got its own legislation that it can be adhered to. How could you explain to people that dynamic of how, for some reason, even though hemp's got its own legislation, it still keeps getting referred to under the Misuse of Drugs Act and blocked? And what pressures has that put on you as a businessman?
So I think the government keep referring to the UN Single Convention on this one, and they say that we have obligations inside that, and I fully agree, we do. We have obligations. I think the key thing here is to essentially look at the three definitions that surround this whole issue. So if you look at our legislation, we have the definition of cannabis, which is cannabis, marijuana, seed, flower, or fruit, and then we have a definition of hemp. And hemp is cannabis seed, flower, or fruit as well. So cannabis and hemp are the same. And then you have a separate definition of industrial hemp. Now, industrial hemp is cannabis sativa with a THC content under 0.35% generally. So those are the three definitions in legislation, and that's in the UN Convention as well, around cannabis. So we have cannabis, we have hemp, and we have industrial hemp. Now, when you look to the UN single, it exempts industrial hemp from the regulations that surround cannabis and hemp. And then you look to our legislation. So right there, we're outside of the UN single already. So the UN single has said, okay, if you're growing for seed or fiber or horticultural purpose, if you're growing industrial hemp, which is low THC, low drug content, you're exempt from all of this. You don't have to worry about it, basically. So we put in the regulations in 2006, and we sort of did the same thing. We said, okay, right, well, we have three definitions. And when you come down to it, you look into what is a hemp product. And a hemp product is something that's made in part or it's made in whole from industrial hemp. So that makes, you know, a medicinal product, which would actually have to adhere to the medicinal the Medicines Act, or a food product, which would actually have to adhere to the Food Act, or a natural health product, which would have to adhere to it, that side of things. So I think the legislation creates a perfect loop. But what the ministry keep doing to us is they keep saying, well, no, the misuse of drugs overrides the hemp regulations. And if you want to grow hemp for medicinal purposes, you must have a license under Section 14 of the Misuse of Drugs Act to grow a prohibited plant. Well, there's a few things with that. One is, I don't grow prohibited plants. I grow approved cultivars. So I have the Director General that has approved my cultivar. Yeah. They've said, this is an approved cultivar because it poses no threat, no danger, no harms of abuse. You know, the old saying is, you can smoke a power pole and not get high, you know, of hemp. But you know, and then so we did this legislation. I think the people that wrote it and the people that took part were very clever. You know, you go back to Mac, he dealt with the Ministry of Agriculture with the power industry. So he sort of knew this was going to happen. So I believe they provided us a pathway. And in that pathway, when we go to the misuse of drugs regulations, there's a section there. It says 3B under licensing, which is application to industrial hemp. And the number one says, no license under these regulations may be issued in respect of industrial hemp. So right there, we have a massive contradiction. We have the Ministry of Health now saying to us that we have to apply for a license under the Misuse of Drugs Act to grow industrial hemp for medicinal purpose. But the regulations themselves state, no license under these regulations may be issued in respect of industrial hemp. So we have this, you know, we have this ministry or these advisors that we believe are acting outside their powers. So we, you know, we've got a very good legal case at the moment. I've spent quite a bit of money with lawyers to progress this and challenge the interpretations of these legislation, because I think that with the two things that we've got there, which is that, you know, you've got their own regulations saying that they can't license industrial hemp under this act, and they can't. It's written there in plain black and white, but they seem to just always say that the misuse of drugs overrides it. Now, I think there's some important stuff that you sort of have to look back to when the legislation was sort of made public, and the explanatory notes that go behind that. The explanatory notes are really, really good because they actually give you a whole idea of what back then they were trying to do. And, you know, the first line is, you know, this license is industrial hemp, so it's not subject to the onerous conditions that illegal marijuana was. Well, it's still subject to those conditions because we're not able to grow it freely and make products. And that's what the legislation was designed to do. You know, we make a range of products. We make, you know, a balm. Oop, I don't know if you see that. But we make a balm, and we make animal health product, animal health supplements, which are basically just full spectrum products. And you know, the ministry is saying, well, no, you can't make those. They're illegal. They contain cannabinoids. And it's like, well, why are they viewing these cannabinoids as contaminants? I think this is my biggest issue is, you know, cannabinoids are essential for human health. We produce them ourselves.
If I may, Chris, they're essential for vertebrate health.
Yeah. Oh, for any animal that has a spine, basically.
Which is why cannabis is not good for politicians, apparently, because they don't have a spine. But anyway,
Chris, ever since 1974, which was regarded as the year of the second prohibition wave on cannabis, up until 74, the focus of cannabis was because of its threat to other industries. In 74, what actually happened was you had the hippies, the kids, and they were experimenting with cannabis, and that the parents who grew up with prohibition, the first wave of prohibition, were concerned about the safety and the health of their children. So they talked to their politicians, because you were allowed to do that back in the day, and so the government decided they would do studies, health studies, on the effects of cannabis. And what they were finding reports were coming back on a weekly basis on the benefits of cannabis, THC, CBD, all the other cannabinoids, on people's health. And so what actually happened was there was five pharmaceutical industries lobbied the government and asked for the rights to have control of all studies and funding and research on cannabis. And what they promised in return was they would find a way to remove the high of THC from cannabis to be able to utilize these medicines without fear. And what we've had since 1974 to now, what's that, 50-odd years of an industry keeping cannabis illegal. So because you're dealing with cannabinoids, that's in the medicinal side of it, and that's where the pressure to keep cannabis at the moment illegal. It's the pharmaceutical industry at the moment. It's a drive, always has been since the 70s. Before the 70s, it was other industries. After the 74, it was a drive. I mean, there was researchers who were looking into cannabis back in the, I think, 76, they had a convention in America, and one stood up and said he could see that by the mid-80s, cannabis would be the super medicine of the world.
We're just about to wrap up now. So, sorry, what were you saying on that, Chris, there? Just one final statement there?
Oh, sorry, that was O'Shaughnessy said that 200 years ago in his extensive study of cannabis in India. He believed, you know, 200 years ago that cannabis medicine would be the future of all medicines. Yes. So, yeah, I believe that, you know, whatever's happened in the past has happened in the past, and it's time for us to change what's happening in the future.
Yes. So, again, and education's the key.
We look at the past to educate ourselves. But I think it's really hard now for them to hide the lies. You know, I think they used to bury the lies in the library. And if you were educated, you had access to those lies and you could use them to your advantage. So it was an education thing. Again, it sort of separated that class and that socioeconomic class. So now that the lies are out, you know, you can't bury those anymore. Information is key. And in an information age, if you're not informed, then that's detrimental to the whole human species. Is, you know, we are these innate beings that want to exist and want to be. We don't want to die. I mean, I guess it's one of those things, but this plant has been part of our survival for centuries. And so it's really strange. I find it really strange that when people are at death and they're facing death, like my sister did, they look to this plant for a little bit of hope. Why is that? You know, why do they look to this plant for a little bit of hope? Is it because it's just innately in our DNA that we actually are so well in tune with this plant, so well in line with it, that it's just, you know, it's essential for our health? I think so. I think, you know, this plant played a major role in getting us to where we are, or getting us to where we were in 1937. And, you know, it's time now for us, which is the new generation of you know, activists or whatever you want to call us, to really get out there and push it publicly that this plant is essential for human health. And if we use it correctly, we can improve the health of all New Zealanders. And that's where I get a little bit pissed off, is that, you know, these people trying to get in on this medical, and it's all dollars and it's all cents. And it's like, no, man, this is not about money. This is about people and the right that people have to have a healthy lifestyle. And, you know, as long as a kid, as long as a parent has got a $5 capsicum or a $5 happy meal, they're always going to go for that happy meal, you know. But if we can get these right oils into these kids' minds at a young age, we can stop those cravings, because the body's getting what it needs. It doesn't crave those other things that aren't essential, you know. So I guess again, back to education.
Yeah, it's true, and I think the biggest problem is the fact that you can get a product that's going to cost you $1,200, but then you can actually replicate that same product at your home for just a couple of bucks. And that's the biggest problem with cannabis is that it is freely available. All its benefits is available with the raw plant.
Yeah, and that's what I found very interesting at the iHemp Summit, where there was a presentation from a man from Deloitte who said categorically that the medical potential profits from cannabis were actually quite low, and I found that very difficult to believe, considering it can be used for almost everything and is the very textbook definition of a panacea. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the ALCP All Caps, a podcast, episode number 4, Stephen Wilkinson, the president of the ALCP, and Chris Woodney from New Zealand Hemp Brokers. That's nzhempbrokers.com, I believe. Is that true,
that's
Chris?
Right.
Damn.
Yeah, you can find all our products online, and you know, we're out there just challenging the Ministry of Health to take us to court. Like Jessamine said at the iHemp Summit, take me to court, prove your point. I'm going to prove mine. I've got it in black and white legislation, and if you want a day in court, let's go. I'm keen.
Hat off to you, Chris. Hat off to you, mate. You're a good guy.
Indeed. And we will be bringing on one hemp or cannabis expert every week on the ALCP podcast, ladies and gentlemen, so that you can hear from the experts in the field what the reality is like out there. Please go to alcp.org.nz, sign up. You can become a member online. You can also donate to the party through Patreon, PayPal, and the little Kiwi Bank one there to help us print out some T-shirts and some signs and pay for internet, so whatever the hell the party's looking for, and we all get it run through the secretary and what have you, so there is a paper trail for every dollar you donate. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for all your support. Please share and like this video and this podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Education, we've got to get the truth out there. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again.
Thanks, Lenny.
Thank you, everyone.